welcome to Garden Fork. Thanks for downloading the show. Are we in the car right now? Are we going to work? Or maybe you're in your garden or vacuuming? I listen to podcasts when I vacuum. So if you would let me know what you're up to, that'd be fun. Radio@gardenfork.tv. If this is your first time, it's Eric and his friends talking about eclectic DIY and cool stuff that we like. And welcome. If you want to subscribe, that would be cool. For those of you that have been listening for a while, that iTunes review would be handy. So, but my best friend Rick is here. Hey, man.
Hey, what's going on, Eric? How are you this morning?
If I can get up and walk and talk, I have no complaints, you know?
I understand the feeling. Today, I'm sitting in the back bedroom because it's rainy and drippy outside. How's it there?
It's cloudy, but it's not bad. You know, it could be a heat wave, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, very strange weather we've had the last 30 days or so. Much more rain than we normally get in Margaritaville Nord than we normally do in July.
We've been good. We had a really ample rain in the spring, which for us means a good honey harvest. And I pulled honey last week, and it was a very good harvest. So.
Oh, how much did you get?
I pulled 4 medium supers. And that filled more than 2 5-gallon buckets up with honey.
Wow. Well done, sir.
So I'll be sending you a jar of this year's harvest. So.
It's my cut for showing up every now and
for
then, right?
Hours and hours of your time.
I'm leaving mine alone this year. You know, I picked up a nice, really nice swarm and put a couple of supers on top and just let them do their thing this year. Get strong and healthy for next year. And maybe I'll have some honey come July.
All right.
Next year.
Mm-hmm. We heard from our, let's just say cryptic and what's the word where someone hides a lot? Reclusive.
Oh, reclusive, yeah.
Executive producer.
You
know, he never calls. It's always an email or a text. And but I did scare him, and because in the last week's show, the solo show, I threatened to reveal his secret fishing hole. And midway through the podcast, he sent me an email. Goes, I haven't listened to the end yet, but you're not going to give away my fishing place, are you? It's in Virginia.
Is it? It must be near me. Well, maybe not. We have a lot of different kinds of fishing in Virginia. You get over in the mountains and there's some wonderful trout fishing.
I think that I'm leaning toward the mountains.
Are you? Okay. Yeah. Down here on the coastal, we do all kinds of, fishing, big business on the head boats, you know, people 30, 40 at a time go out and, sit and drift across Chesapeake Bay and do a little fishing there. And, in the winters we have, really, they're a kind of bass. They call them rockfish here, but that's a big thing. So we have lots of fishing going on year round, and of course, lots of crabbing.
Yeah, I'll have to ask the executive producer whether he's crabbing or not. But he did send me some pictures of his tomatoes. He was drying in his food dryer. They look good.
Mm. And how are your tomatoes this year?
We have a couple cherry tomatoes. We have a couple of videos out about planting and caging your tomatoes. And so good. The blight hasn't hit yet. So crossing my fingers.
You know, I got a late start, but my tomatoes are coming on strong now and they're looking really good. And I used my technique of putting down ground cover and then planting through it.
Yep.
For the tomatoes. And it really keeps the leaves. And if it rains, like it's been raining hard here, normally that's the death of tomatoes this time of year. They've been doing really good because the bacteria in the soil is not splashing up on the leaves and starting a fungus and a blight. And so I'm hopeful this year.
Yay. I'm just starting to get some red cherry tomatoes, and then the bigger ones will come. I managed to kill my garden gem seedlings, so my neighbor gave me some very robust hybrid that he grew from seeds, so we'll see what happens there.
Okay, and then my okra is going great guns. This year I planted crimson okra.
Oh,
it's a nice red color, and we're harvesting more than we can possibly eat, I think.
Maybe you could share some with our reclusive executive producer.
Maybe. He might have okra going, I don't know.
Hey, last week with the solo show, after what the executive producer called the diatribe, I read an article about thank you notes from the New York Times and how they only take a few minutes to do, and they're actually highly valued by the recipients.
Oh, that's true. And not an email thank you note, a real handwritten thank you note.
You know, it's funny, though, but they did some testing. You know, the scientists, the sociologists listening are yelling back at the car speaker right now. But they said an email thank you scores very high in satisfaction on the receiving end as well.
Oh, really? Maybe it's a generational thing. I know that she who must be obeyed, she gets a fair number of handwritten thank you notes, and she just gushes over them. She loves the cards, the handwriting, the texture of the paper, and email ones. She appreciates them, but they're not quite the same thing.
When you become a Patreon patron of Garden Fork Radio and Garden Fork TV, I send you a hand-printed lino block thank you card.
Big I've got hand. Mine, yeah.
Yeah. It might camp, take yeah. me a few months to send the card out because they're in a – I'm moving my office around, and I put them in a box, and I just saw them, and I'm like, oh, I got to send out those cards. Anyway, there's some information about becoming a Garden Fork patron in the show notes here. Ask for a small $3 donation a month. That's $36 a year. Help make Garden Fork more Garden Forky, you know?
Or just a cup of coffee for Eric and a kibble or two for the pups.
Yeah. So Radio Mike, who actually will be back on the show again soon.
Well, that's wonderful.
He sent us an email regarding the thank you notes article, and I will read it for you now, okay?
Go ahead.
It's from Mike. A few months ago, we were talking about one of those drinking bird things and how they work. It looks like a ostrich-like flamingo thing. It's glass, and it's on a little stand, and it drops down. It looks like it's taking a drink out of your drink and pops back up and goes back and forth. And they were talking about how those things work, and he and Mike rattled off. The head gets wet, the water evaporates. Evaporation causes cooling. Cooling causes condensation of the alcohol inside. The little bird, the glass bird, there's alcohol inside. Condensation creates a vacuum. Liquid is drawn to the top in order to balance the vacuum. That causes the head to get heavy and the bird bows for a drink. Then it starts over again.
Oh. Okay.
So
I had no idea.
His friends wondered how I had. Okay. So it's like they wondered how I had that knowledge ready to go. So how did his friends were wondering, well, gee, Mike, how did you know that? And he said that he learned it in high school physics, sophomore year, Mr. Therese. I said that Mr. Therese was a young teacher, and he said that his goal was to teach us in a way we'd remember that for the rest of our lives.
And apparently it's working.
So I looked him up. In other words, he's looking up Mr. Therese. He's an IT director for a school district. I sent him an email reciting how the bird worked and told him that I still remember 33 years later, thanks to him. It took me 5 minutes, and he said that it made his day. There's a lot of physics in that little bird.
There is. There is. And I've sat and watched them, you know, do that little trick forever and wondered how they work. Never had the gumption to get up and go check.
Well, if you had Mr. Therese for sophomore physics.
Then I would have known.
This actually got me and the camera operator talking in the car about, and then we listened to a BBC podcast called Crowd Science. And they were talking about how to get your teenage kids to listen to you about advice for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking each person what was a profound thing that someone when you were young said to you. And I have one that I thought I'd share with everybody.
Oh, I'd be glad to hear it.
In my senior high school year, I had Dr. Paul Hirth for English. I think it was called English or Literature. I can't remember what it was exactly called. But it's basically, you know, we're reading Albert Camus and Jean-Paul Sartre and things like that. He let me and a buddy make a movie for our senior thesis.
That oh, wow. Cool.
Anyway,
yeah, no kidding.
He, you know, we had to take written tests. That was required because you had to be able to write, you know. And there were a couple people in class who just did not care. You know, they were just, they didn't really care. And I was like, oh my gosh, how could you not care? And his whole premise was, as long as you take the piece of paper, the test, and write your name on it and try, you won't get a failing grade. Because according to him, if you at least try, you can't fail.
Right.
So that's right. What Garden Fork's all about. You know, it's just, you know, we're not failing because we're at least trying.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of an existential Camus kind of question, isn't it?
Yeah, we did a lot of that there. It was just over my head. And then I went back and watched our 8mm movie a while ago, and I'm like, ooh, this is kind of deep.
Yeah, yeah. The only advice I ever got in high school English writing is when I was carving my stone tablets that I was holding a chisel badly. So.
You're not that old, Rick. But you did use Morse code, so.
Yeah, yeah. Army taught me how to do that for sure. They had the patented Morse code. I think if I talked about this, the patented Morse code learning process.
Yes.
Where you were given a specific speed every week. And if you missed your speed 2 weeks in a row, they take your headsets away from you. They give you a steel pot and they march you in uniform or in formation down to the infantry battalion down the road.
Yes.
And it was an incentive to learn Morse code.
So anyway, that was from Mike on thank you notes. And I actually got one just the other day that I have to reread. It's kind of long and I don't quite understand it. So I'm going to ask the camera operator to read it and explain it to me. But it was pretty interesting because sometimes I just get really kind of down in the dumps and I'm like, why am I even doing this? And then someone sends me an email and goes, wow, you convinced me to build a closet.
Oh.
I'm like, holy cow.
And then I bricked it in. My mother's been fine in there ever since.
Stop.
Oh.
All right. Really cool stuff.
A cask of Amontillado. Anyway, go ahead.
I get a lot of the interesting things that I post on Facebook and Twitter, and also talk about on the show here from the Root Simple website, rootsimple.com. They also have a podcast. They're kind of like our sister podcast at this point.
Yeah, that's the other Eric, wouldn't it? The Eric with a K.
West Coast Eric and his wife.
West Coast Eric, yeah.
So they talked about a Flickr archive that's called Project Apollo Archive. And it's not run by NASA, but these volunteers have taken literally the Hasselblad rolls of film from the Apollo project, taken the high-res digitizations from NASA, annotated them with metadata, and loaded them up onto this Flickr album. And it's really cool because it shows a series of pictures. It's not just the real money shot that you see like Buzz Aldrin with the lunar module, you know, behind, you know, reflected in his face shield, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the second stage is ejecting from the command module, and they took several pictures of it moving away through the window. It's really cool because, you know, a couple of them, you can see that they didn't frame out the window, so you can see the corner of the window from the command module, and they're most of them are uncolor corrected, so you can download them and do what you want with them in Lightroom, whatever. And I just thought that was pretty cool that it's the unvarnished look at it.
Oh, so, you had me at Hasselblad. So
yeah.
I what a wonderful camera. That and the old Leicas, you know, when you trip the shutter, I think old time photographers, you know, really felt that, you know, it sounded like $100 bills when you know, just kind of flipping through your fingers when you trip the shutter of a Leica. And the Hasselblad was kind of the same league. Nice big format camera.
When I started as a photography assistant for fashion photographers, they would shoot Hasselblads and they would shoot really fast. And I got really good at loading 120 and 220 analog film. That's how old I am.
Well, yeah. You know, it's tricky because you got all that paper to deal with. And
right.
Roll it
and
up
then you
and
have
stuff.
To fold it backwards into the other spool and then pop it through and you have to advance it. We were pretty good. Me and my friend, Richard, I just talked to Richard about an hour ago. We are still good friends. So.
Oh, terrific.
Another cool archive is archive.org, which I learned about from Root Simple. if you go to archive.org/projects, I'll link to it in the show notes here, it lists multiple cool things that they're doing. And like Wikipedia and Wikimedia, I can't keep them all straight all the time.
I know.
But what are the archive, Internet Archive projects, they have one called the Political TV Ad Archive, which is very interesting because if you want to research what a politician said 10 years ago versus what they're saying now, or, you know, I think a lot of that kind of stuff you see now in the news, I think they reference that site. There's something called the Open Library. There's a scanning service. They will scan your collections and provide open and free access. That's amazing. They
have
the Wayback Machine, which is a web archive. I mean, like, there's earlier versions of the Garden Fork website. They're in there, you know, because they grab the HTML. And there's one called the Internet Archive Bookmobile. Just cool stuff. If you want to look at that at night before you go to bed, pretty cool stuff. And the cool thing is that they have an archive of old catalogs of how-to stuff. And one of them is a digitized book of how-to electrical wiring from like the 1920s or 30s.
Oh, my.
And it's like still knob and tube wiring and stuff.
Darn. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I'm trying to imagine how difficult it must have been to wire things back then. Of course, I guess you're only going for one or two plugs in a house, but to do the insulators all along the rafters and run the wire down the walls and stuff. And it's that old cloth wrapped copper. I bet that's great copper in there. It's probably about as big as your little finger. It's great stuff.
When we renovated my buddy's three family, we had the one room was full of copper pipe and wire, and that paid for a lot of construction material, and we took that to the scrap metal place.
I bet so.
That was pretty good. So pretty cool stuff. It's the archive.org/projects. I'll link to the article that Eric did on Root Simple, and then this Building Technology Heritage Library, which has just all sorts of different catalogs. There's one called the Color Mixing Guide, How to Identify Genuine Mahogany, the 1926 Waverly Catalog of Stove, Range, Furnace, and Boiler Repairs.
Goodness.
Architectural and Building Catalog, Northern Electric General Catalog, the Home Book Plan by the Peter Verdenberg Lumber Company, Corrugated and Flat Transit. What's that? It's from the Johns Manville Company.
Corrugated and Flat Transit. I don't know, unless it's shipping stuff. My house, people have heard about the Craftsman homes.
Yes.
And they literally arrived on a flatbed rail car. And I'm wondering if it's something like that. My house was a Lowe's house. And not as popular as the Craftsman, but people actually built it out of a kit that came in a rail car, and they delivered it with a forklift.
Cool. I love that. Early flat pack. So the Johns Manville Corrugated and Flat Trans site is a roofing and exterior wall material. So like corrugated tin roofing and things like that.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's just like the Kitchen Plan book, Stanley Electric Tools, the Whitney Maple Catalog from 1939, the General Electric Street Lighting Catalog from 1937. This is cool stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Is that back when they were actually using the arc lights mounted on tops of poles and just broadcasting a broad light in streets?
Well, let me see here. Oh, it's and James Lee Jr. This is his book. Wow.
Thanks, James.
I'm holding up to the microphone here. There's a street lighting code. No, I don't see any arc lights, but
yeah. Well, they tried that for a while. Small arc lights on the top of poles, and they'd put them every block or two. And they were more like waypoints. You know, it wasn't to light a whole big area. It was just so you could go from place to place to place, and you know, see what you were walking into, more or less. But that was kind of the early lighting, I think, and public lighting at least.
Well, this is pretty. So, I mean, this is. I'm doing a deep dive here, and you're all coming along for the ride while you're getting ready to go to work. So,
yeah, real snooze fest here, Eric.
Sorry.
No, it's really, West Coast Eric just turns up some amazing stuff. And he has a really nice newsletter. He goes into deep dives on almost everything you can think of. Very eclectic kind of person and personality.
Yeah, the sign up for his email is a little buried on the site. You have to go to the bottom and look for it. I've been on him to fix that. Maybe he's listening to me right now as on the treadmill.
Fix it, Eric.
Yeah. Do you shop on Amazon? I shop locally and also on Amazon and other online stores. If I need something very specific, like seat covers for the new used car we just bought, I will go online and sometimes use Amazon. And Garden Fork happens to have a dedicated shopping page on the Amazon site now, which is very cool. It is an affiliate linked page. We do get a finder's fee for anything that you buy when you start shopping from that page. But I list there interesting items that I think are worthy of the Garden Fork DIY person. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. If you would start your Amazon shopping experience, no matter what you're looking for on Amazon, start at Garden Fork, and that would be great. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. That's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. Anything on your list, sir? That's it for the Eric list.
You know, it's been kind of a quiet period for me. Had some dental work done. You mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, and my new teeth are doing good.
Yay.
But you know, take care of your teeth. Actually, it was a fault in my teeth that made some replacements necessary. So, you know, it just happens. But in New Zealand and places where they have sheep, sheep will chew and chew and chew until they'll grind down their teeth till they can't chew anymore and they'll die. And so I'm not a sheep. I got my teeth replaced, at least some of them.
You know, I go to the dentist and there are fantastic people there. And one, like a year ago, Dr. Jim, I call him, came in and he said, I still have my wisdom teeth. And he says, your wisdom teeth are turning gray. We're going to have to pull them out soon. You don't brush enough back there. And so I've been like definitely paying attention to that. And I have the fancy electric toothbrush and paying more attention back there. And then I saw him, I think 6 months later, and I asked him, you know, for my cleaning. He comes in and I'm like, hey, Dr. Jim, what about those? What about the wisdom teeth back there? He goes, oh, they look fine. And I'm like, well, what? Mixed messages from your dentist is not something you want, you know?
Oh, yeah. People have been telling me, or dentists have been telling me about this for years. I have just a little bit. I'm never sure which is an underbite, which is an overbite. But anyway, the bottom teeth in the front rub up against the back of my top teeth. And it's eventually scooping out. And it was almost to the point where it had whittled down enough to get to the root. And so before they did that, they took some action and, kind of ground down my front teeth and top and put some veneers on. And so, it worked out. But, it's like, if you don't do this now, pretty soon it's going to break through to a root. Then you're going to start having, cavity problems. Next thing you know, it's root canal and you're going to be snagglepussed in the front. And I said, well, let's go ahead and do this, Yeah. But, just kind of a fault the way your teeth work. It's wonderful what restorative medicine can do for people now.
You know what's really restorative is an iTunes review.
Oh, good lead in.
And
good
we have a new in. One from, it's 5-star, great podcast, J.P. LeMay from July 26th. Okay. Started back at the beginning and watched the evolution and growth. Great tips and topics, and use the home repair tips on my house.
Terrific.
Yay.
Thank you so much, JP. Jet Petroleum, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, it's those kind of things help us float to the top in the iTunes charts. And that's another way, even if you can't support Garden Fork on the Patreon, you can really help by floating us to the top of the list. And good iTunes reviews. We appreciate 5-star reviews. We really, that makes us happy and keeps things going for Eric.
Yay. By the way, when they at the bottom, they say listeners also subscribe to Root Simple is the number one. So I think there's a lot of overlay between Root Simple podcasts and Garden Fork Radio podcasts.
Yeah, it's getting crowded out there.
Hey, anyone who's an expert with RSS feeds and that, there is actually an archive, a back archive of 300. We're on show 480 something right now. So there's 380 shows. So there's 280 shows that, unless you go to the website and dig through it, not even all the shows are on the website. So is there a way I could provide an RSS feed of the back archive to people if you are expert at that, like a podcast player compliant RSS feed? I'd love to hear from you. Radio@gardenfork.tv would be great.
There you go. It's beyond my expertise.
I know enough to be dangerous. There is a way to do it, but it would cost me like $20 a month. And I'm trying to not have it yet. So that's $250 a year. And I'm trying to actually build income rather than spend more money.
Yeah, exactly. This, even though it's, it's not making a living kind of money, it takes a fair amount of money just to keep the podcast on the air. I mean, it's not just sitting around talking and it goes out. It's free to the people listening, but it still takes a lot of money and effort to and equipment to keep us going. So, yeah, just a little bit when you can, that'll be great.
Here's what keeps us going is a email from Kevin, also known as KC, who is he's an expert in everything. Our computer expert, photography, video expert.
Oh, little black dogs.
Yes. Okay. He has a new dog, by the way, which is like I'm going to mangle the name. It looks like a German Shepherd, but better.
a Malinois?
No. Anyway, let me read the little note. It's from Kevin talking about caramel. Eric, in the recent rebroadcast episode, you mentioned melting caramels. Now that you have an Instant Pot, have you tried making real caramel in the Instant Pot? Easy peasy, no fuss involved. Love the show, Kevin. And I have not. Have you ever tried that, Rick?
No, I tend more towards savory than sweet, and so we don't do a lot of that kind of thing around here.
I watch the Great British Baking Show, and I see them, they have to make a caramel for something, and even these amateurs, they are experts, but they're amateurs, have trouble making caramel, so.
Yeah, I suppose not burning it's the big thing.
And not burning your skin either.
Ah, well, I hadn't thought about that. Like I say, no experience in it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was kind of an eclectic show there, wasn't that, for everybody?
It was. And I imagine people are pretty close to their destination. We try to keep this at about 30 minutes. And I think we've gotten to the point where we ought to let people go and do something interesting for the day.
All right. Check out this BBC podcast called Crowd Science.
I'm going to watch. I had not heard of that one. And I listen to podcasts all the time.
Their podcasts are pretty droll and boring. And it's always a guy, and he's got this monotone voice. And this one, it's a woman hosting the podcast, and it's much more animated, and I think it's much better. So
I guess this boring guy will kind of go and drool or droll somewhere else.
I did not mean that.
Okay. Well, listen, you have a great day.
All right. Make it a great day, and thank you. Thank you very much for listening, and always I want to hear from you. Radio@gardenfork.tv. I'll see you.
Okay. Talk to you later, my friend.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com, and our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.